49 to St. George's Hill. A ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said.
Hello, this is Radio Free Kanata, the official voice of the Republic of Kanata, and I'm your host, Kevin Annett. With me today is my co-host, Ryan Gable. We broadcast live every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time at bbsradio.com/radiofreekanata. And we are archived at the official website of the Republic, which is www.kanatarepublic.ca. The Republic of Kanata was proclaimed and lawfully established on January 15, 2015, to replace the criminally convicted regime known as Canada and the Crown of England. But Kanata is wherever in the world free and sovereign men and women are reclaiming their world and its wealth from criminal corporate regimes. Kanata is a vision, and now a growing reality, a nation of many nations united under a new common law jurisdiction. And Radio Free Kanata is our platform to inspire, to educate, and to actively mobilize our people for liberty. Now, over 1,200 men and women have taken the oath of allegiance to the new republic and are actively working to reclaim their communities from the fraudulent Crown Law jurisdiction. Over half of these people are in the West and most of the others in Ontario, with a growing Francophone section in Quebec, and members from five Indigenous nations are also adherents of the new republic. At present, we are actively training common law sheriffs to act as the legal enforcement arm of the republic. The sheriffs are helping to launch two major public campaigns on behalf of the republic, the first to expose and stop organized child trafficking and arrest the convicted war criminals of church and state across Canada, and to stop the fraudulent and criminal actions of the so-called Canadian Revenue Agency. These campaigns will be discussed in detail in upcoming programs. You can join this vital work and take the oath to the Republic by contacting us at republicofkanata@gmail.com. Now, today on Radio Free Kanata, we are continuing with Dean Clifford from last week. A very inspiring interview. As a matter of fact, at the end of the last show, telephone board or whatever you call it, where people call in, it was flooded. We couldn't even get people calling in. There were so many people wanting to make a comment and to be part of the show. So we hope you're all listening again. We know our listenership has increased greatly, including thanks to Dean's brilliant witness. And we look forward to talking to him more today. I want to bring in my co-host, Ryan Gable, first of all. Ryan, hi, are you there?
I am, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How's the week treated you?
It's been pretty well. You know, just been doing research and continuing to write. What about you?
Well, the same. You know, it's really important for us to keep a wider vision all the time. And I often see this as a way to unite people, not reinvent the wheel, but to unite all these people who are already doing all this great work under a new jurisdiction. And that's to teach them about the common law, which is, again, what we're going to talk about today. I remember last week, though, Ryan, one of the things that we did bring up, which I do want to stay focused on over the next number of shows, is the whole cultic aspects of these crimes and the broader forces that we're up against. So I know that you have a lot to say and you've done some very important research about that.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's one of the most significant factors in understanding specifically the rituals, whether they're the murdering of children or, in the case of Jimmy Savile, raping and murdering women and men who were, you know, anywhere from, I think, the news reported, mainstream reported, 12 to 45 years old. There's significance in the rituals for certain days, certain times. And it's really funny, if you start to research it, Kevin, you'll find that not just because a cult means hidden, so it's not just like secret organizations or secret sects within religious institutions that use certain days for certain reasons, but even mainline governmental institutions choose certain days to reveal certain programs, or NASA that names some of their programs or shuttles after different gods and goddesses and launches them at certain times. There's a specific significant reason they choose these dates and times, whether you know, most people believe that it has any significance or not is besides the fact, because other people do, and they use those dates to, whether it's running a program or it's launching a rocket or it's, performing some type of sacrificial ritual. A lot of this goes back into the very, very ancient world, as you've documented yourself as well.
Right. And just so people, before we move on, we just to flag some websites on that. ITCCS, the International Tribunal in the Crimes of Church and State, that has done so much to document and bring to adjudication some of these crimes. That's itccs.org. It especially has the court evidence and documents that convicted Joseph Ratzinger, Jorge Bergoglio, and other officials of the so-called Church of Rome for these crimes, along with Elizabeth Windsor, so-called Queen of England. And could you mention your website too, Ryan?
Yes, my website is www.thesecretteachings.info. There's a lot of great information on my website, free information that you can obtain about these subjects in particular. And since you and I started working together, I've really focused more and more of my time on researching these aspects, because I think the symbology and I think that the significance of certain days is really important, really because of this reason, Kevin. If you really look at whether it's the basis of religious institutions, religions in general, you'll find that there's a occultic significance within all of them, going again back into the ancient world, and that there are certain days that are reserved, whether they're based on solar activity or they're based on the movement of the planets, that are reserved for a less sinister purpose. I guess you could say kind of pagan beliefs, the worshiping of nature. But those same types of events, those same types of days, those same times can be co-opted by those with not so malevolent purposes, those with more sinister purposes, and that same energy can be diverted and used for a much more nefarious reason.
Well, and of course, this applies to many issues, not simply having to do with so-called organized religion, but it seems to pervade the whole system. So I'm sure Dean and Teresa, I'm sure, have their own insights about this, so I look forward to their remarks about this too. So why don't we go to Dean and Teresa now. Hi, folks. Are you on the air?
Yes, we are. We're here.
We're both here together.
Good. It's really great to have you back. And Dean, I've had just such a positive response from the last show. You're very well known, and your witness is known all over the world. I've been getting emails from literally all over the world about the looking forward to today's program. So I hope we can carry on a little bit from what we were talking about last time when we ended, which, if memory serves, had to do with when you were incarcerated in Brandon Prison, you were in touch with indigenous people in the prison and others who you were teaching about common law. Some of the people who wrote in wanted to know more about what those folks were working with you on, the ways you were able to help them specifically and that kind of thing.
Well, for the most part, you have to understand that none of these people have any idea what their culture or heritage is anymore. They have no idea what the law is. They basically have given up on the system altogether and are just victims of it at this point, where they have no hope of anything. Most of the people, as soon as it kind of got out on a few of the ranges and then throughout the jail, they were calling me the jailhouse lawyer, even though they know I'm not a lawyer. But just if anybody had any questions about any legal stuff or what they're, how I might be able to help them with what's going on with their cases, they would come and they would talk to me, no problem. We all got along fantastic. And for the most part, like I say, it's just a general hopelessness that most of these people end up fleeing out for things they haven't even done, because they're going to be in jail awaiting trial longer than they would get if they just plea out in the first place. And that's well known among these people. There's right away, their first thing that they do is they plea out, because everybody knows that's been a victim of this system long enough that you will spend more time in jail waiting for trial. You will not be granted bail, and you'll spend more time sitting waiting for your trial than you would if you just pled out and took some kind of a plea bargain and took the criminal charge and spent a few months in prison and then get out. And that's the way the system is designed, is to make you just not even want to bother waiting around and fighting these charges. And even if you do want to sit around in jail and fight the charges, which some of them actually do, most of them came to talk to me because they haven't heard from their legal aid lawyer in more than 4 months. No matter how many times they left messages, how many times they sent letters to their legal aid lawyer, they hadn't even gotten a phone call back in 4 months. They have no idea what's going on with their charges. They're just sitting there and they're rotting, and they just have given up. They're like, well, what's the point? My lawyer doesn't even get back to me. So they'll try to call legal aid from the phone on the range and leave a message saying, could you get this guy to get back to me, or I'm going to fire him and get another lawyer. Well, they're just going to get another legal aid lawyer that will ignore them for another 4 months. That's all that goes on there. It's absolutely absurd what goes on, and especially here in Manitoba, which we now know has the highest rate of pretrial detention in Canada. So 70% of the people in jail in Manitoba are in pretrial confinement.
Unbelievable. It's like a system of modern slavery where the lawyers and judges are simply traitors in human flesh or something.
Yeah, well, that's all it is. And, I mean, you compound that with what we just spoke about briefly. We touched on it in the last radio show there about, 10,000 Native children in Manitoba are in CFS custody. So this is far worse than the residential schools ever were.
Yeah.
And it's no different in the prison system either. You don't have a hope of anything in the prison system. They don't know their rights. They don't know what they can do. They don't know what the law is. They don't even know what their own culture and heritage is anymore. They just know that basically everything was stolen from them, and they don't have a hope. Once they're arrested, and most of these people, if you talk to them, are in there for some pretty stupid things. I mean, breaches from previous probations, like they get out and they've got like a 2-year recognizance where they got to, keep the peace and a curfew of 10 o'clock and no alcohol, no drugs, no this, no that, check in every week with a probation officer, just ridiculous things. That the minute you breach one of these things, if they catch you out 5 minutes after curfew, on a reserve in northern Manitoba in the middle of nowhere, you're arrested immediately and you will spend the next 2 months in jail, even if you do take it to trial for no reason. So that's what the jails are filled with, these evil, bad people that society doesn't want around anymore. Most of these guys have been on probation for 10 years, which means the original charge, which is normally some kind of a domestic dispute where nothing actually happened. Two people just got drunk and the woman got pissed off at the guy. Next thing you know, she's calling the cops because they know with the zero tolerance policy in Manitoba, they'll be arrested immediately. They'll be gone to jail. Half of them try to have the charges dropped the next day when they sober up a little bit and realize, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Like, it was really dumb. And they can't. It's already in the system now. You're done. These guys are on probation for the next 10 years. Every time they breach in any way, it's immediately back to jail. And then then when they do get let out 6 months down the road, a year down the road, it's another 2 years of probation added on with the same conditions of probation, if not more. It's just once you're sucked in, it is done. It is a hamster wheel of never-ending nonsense and bullshit. And it is really disgusting and really pathetic what's being done.
Another added factor too, Dean, is that under the Indian Act, and I don't believe this is being revised or thrown out, when the money that was, if you're an Aboriginal person and you're receiving money from the government, if you're incarcerated, that money doesn't continue to go to your family. It reverts to the government. In other words, there's an economic incentive on the part of Ottawa to lock up Indians. And in fact, they profit from it. And so, I had a friend, Elliot, he went to live in the Yukon about 10, 15 years ago. He did a lot of research and he found that the prison system in the Yukon was getting twice the amount of money for Indians when they were in prison and Inuit than there were for white people or non-natives. So, I mean, it's a big racket.
Well, that's exactly it. Most people think that that maintaining the prisons and keeping prisoners in Canada actually costs the people money. And that's because people don't know how this country, this nation works. And this goes back to the fact that all this money being held in trust for the people, the government can't touch that unless they can actually justify it through expenses. And the way they raise expenses so they can pull the money out of the trust accounts is by billing you for correctional services. It's a service they provide you. It's deemed to be a benefit. So when they throw you in jail and it costs them $300 a day to keep you in jail, they're billing the people $1,000 a day. So they're making $1,000 a day net profit. And that goes back to the corporation of the United Kingdom, which is, as we know, a crown monopoly, a crown corporation owned by Elizabeth Windsor, who operates under the trade name Queen Elizabeth II. That's a crown corporation. Mm-hmm. So that's how they profit. So they're squandering our resources. They're putting all the money into trust. We can't touch that money. It's all held in trust for us until they bill us for services like correctional services, crown prosecution services, judicial services, police services. Right. These are all services that they provide for us that they bill us for.
So they're, it's a way of soaking the whole populace. That's what the system is.
It's a way of soaking everybody by holding all of your money in trust and then billing you and then basically just through accounting fraud and providing you with services that you don't want and things that aren't even services and they don't benefit you in the slightest, they steal all that money from you and that becomes corporate profit for them.
Incredible. Let me ask Teresa or Rand if they want to jump in with anything.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment that here in the United States, you know, we have one of the highest incarceration rates in the world. And what you tend to find is that a lot of people who are arrested for minor drug offenses, you know, just having less than an ounce of marijuana, they're taken to prisons that are owned by the banks who launder the drug money into the country in the first place. Wells Fargo, Wachovia, one of the biggest ones. I mean, our system here is just as corrupt. And then you find, remember back in 2011, there was a judge in Pennsylvania named Mark Ciavarella, who was paid, he was like over $2 million he made sending kids to detention centers that he had a connection with, whether or not they deserved to go there or not. So it was just like a violent system. And I remember back, I think it was last year some point, Judge Fulford in the UK, who was I guess he was arrested because he was involved in the pedophile information exchange, and he was one of the highest level judges in the UK. It just shows you that at no point, at no level is anybody safe. The entire system is corrupted from Canada to the US to the UK, around the world.
That Judge Fulford, by the way, wasn't actually arrested. He was named. He's a high court judge. He sits on the European Court of Justice, and he's the Queen's advisor on constitutional matters. He's been quoted as saying that the age of consent for sexual relations should be lowered to 4 years old. And he's a sitting judge in the High Court in England.
Did I just hear that right? 4 or 14?
4.
And there's a lot of senators here in the United States as well, and some congressmen who are also trying to get laws passed to lower the age of consent to below 14 in almost every state. Some of them want it under 10 years old as well. And it's a concerted effort, Kevin, as you know, not just here in the U.S. but around the world.
Well, interestingly enough, one of the judges that was first on my case, a judge by the name of Heinrichs, and I've got his first name somewhere too. I kept track of this guy while I was in jail. He was the guy that was refusing to recognize me in my proper status, wrote up three pretrial conference reports that were entirely based in fraud, who continued to identify me as basically an artificial person. Despite everything that I provided in the courtroom, just helping with the whole court fraud process, it was okay with me being in jail, on pretrial custody, refusing me bail. He was all part of that whole, the whole cult there at the courts. And he's one of the guys I've had run-ins with before in the past. But I came across a newspaper article while I was in jail from some of the stuff that we were able to get in, where he let off a repeat pedophile, a repeat offender. Let the guy out he was out on bail as it was, and then even when he was convicted, he was given no jail time because Justice Heinrich, on the court's transcript, said that he felt bad for the guy because he had a rough upbringing as a child and felt sorry for him. So despite the fact that he's a repeat offender as a pedophile, he shouldn't serve any jail time. He should get maybe some treatment or something or a slap on the wrist, but because he had a rough childhood, it's okay apparently if this guy is a pedophile. So that's what Justice Heinrich of the Manitoba justice system believes. A man like me who's done nothing but try to teach people their rights and to do no harm should be locked up for a year and a half at a time. But a man who is a repeat convicted pedophile should not serve any jail time because he had a rough childhood. So that tells me where that guy's sentiments lie. So I wouldn't be surprised to find out that he's obviously either a closet pedophile or probably a well-known pedophile himself. So.
Well, let's not forget, too, the Harper government a couple of years ago changed the criminal code, lowering mandatory sentence for child rape to 1 year, which is, in other words, you get 2 to 5 years for possessing more than 6 marijuana plants, but it's less of a crime to rape a child. You only get a year.
Yes, exactly.
In lovely Canada. Teresa, I know you're having problems with a cold or something, but do you have anything you want to say?
Well, my experience that I've had with the courts is no matter where you stand. When you do stand, they are terrified of you, and they will try to do everything they can to, you know, knock you down. And they know the truth will set you free. And when you know what the truth is, when they know that you know what the truth is, they are terrified, literally terrified. And that was my experience in the last court cases that I myself went through. I mean, I got really mad. I went in, and of course, you know, when you're presenting yourself to the courts, and they make you the last one on the docket. They totally ignored me. I stood up. They still ignored me. I had to smash my hand on their podium and say, excuse me, I have a hearing here, and I want you to listen to me. I'm here for you to listen, and you better listen. Well, they immediately paid attention, ran back up to their big, high, mighty chair, and they paid attention. But previous to that, it was like, oh, it's just another one of these people. They're afraid, and I can see we're at the point of critical mass, and it's turning, quickly now. It was slow before, now it's going quickly, and they can't handle it. I mean, they're gonna fight. They're gonna, you know, fight screaming all the way down. So,
very important, very true. Why don't we focus a little bit on that now? And Dean, why don't you address a little bit about how people can fight back? What are some of the methods you'd suggest? I know there was talk about trying to convene common law courts, although the whole question of enforcement is a big issue. What do you do with the verdict once you have it?
Well, the common law courts under the law of the land are still there. They're really doing their best to cover those up. They've all, in Manitoba especially, I know since I've been in jail, people have done more research and well, I got to tell you, I've been busy this last week just getting caught up to the explosion of information out there and the research people have done since I've been gone. And even here in Manitoba, where I live, it's very clear that the common law courts or the county courts were merged with Queen's Bench back in the late 1960s. So they're still there. They're just buried. And they know that we don't know how to access them properly. And we're figuring out how to do that now, and that's starting to terrify them. Because we do have our remedy there. It is being hidden from us, though. And that does raise some other issues with the lengths that they're going to keep us away from the courts of proper jurisdiction. We have to remember, especially in Canada and every other country that's a member of the United Nations, they are bound by international covenants under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the ICCPR. They are bound by that covenant to make sure that we have access to effective courts. So that's a violation of international law right there, and we may want to start pointing that out to these people, that they're by making it so incredibly difficult for us to navigate or to find the appropriate court or to invoke the proper jurisdiction to protect our rights, that they have denied us access to effective courts.
Right? Okay, well, let's say I'm Joe Blow and I'm having trouble. I'm getting defrauded by Canada Revenue, which is not an uncommon thing here. What would you do? How does someone go about finding your local common law court, and how do you extricate it from the Queen's Bench system and all that?
Well, that's really where now that I'm out, and I guess I can experiment a little bit more now because I don't feel as threatened anymore that, you know, well, they have my body. I have to play ball a little bit. You know, like I don't want to be a real problem in the courts because, well, they're just going to keep me in jail longer, which, they just proved that after 16 months. But I am going to be making some petitions into the court here right away, and I am going to bring in the proper laws, and we are going to figure out how to properly invoke them. But a lot of this really seems to be more so what you say in the courtroom and what you invoke right there in the courtroom, just even verbally. Just by standing your ground and repeating the same thing at least a minimum of three times when you're asking questions until you get an answer, and just invoking your rights. And you have to actually, it looks like that's starting to be a very powerful word with when you're invoking certain rights. I mean, anybody who watches debates in the United Nations and stuff like that or anywhere else, you know, can see that countries have to invoke certain treaties when something has happened. They're trying to force another country to live up to terms and obligations it's under. They actually verbally, literally say that they're invoking certain parts of a treaty to hold the other party accountable. So it really just comes down to being able to speak even a minimal amount of law words. I don't even want to say the word legal, but being able to invoke things properly. And unfortunately, that's where things are at right now. We're losing a procedure but we're winning in substance. And I used to not give procedure any time of day because it's my firm belief that we shouldn't have to know procedure to get access to our rights. And fortunately, there also is now Supreme Court decisions that people have sent me confirming that, yes, in fact, there is no proper procedure for invoking your rights. So I think this is really just going to come down to people saying, look, I know what my rights are. I'm invoking my common law rights. I don't care what you people are doing around here, but I think you're deceiving me. I think everything you're doing here is to try to deceive me into contracting with you in a court that doesn't recognize my common law rights. So I am claiming all those rights. I'm invoking them, and I'm going to stand under them and protected by them, no matter what you people say or do. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can simplify that. And just doesn't every time they speak to you, just repeat something like that. I claim this jurisdiction. I'm invoking my common law rights, and I fully reserve my whatever. Just keep speaking it. Whatever they say to you, they try to bullshit you. They'll try to lead you down some garden path. They'll talk shit to you, or the judge will keep saying things like, "Well, you know, it's well established that this and this and this and this." You don't care about that. Repeat the same words. Okay. When a judge says, "Well, it's my opinion that," well, I'm not here for his opinion. And judges will often say, well, it's my opinion this, or, you know, in my opinion that, or, you know, I believe this. I've had lots of judges say, well, you know, I believe that blah, blah, blah. I don't give a shit about his beliefs. I'm not here for beliefs. I have my own beliefs. Okay. I'm here for a determination of law. Are you making a determination that I have no common law rights under the law of the land?
Okay, well, you know,
Dean, asking that until they answer you.
After the break, I want to get into that more. I know that I'm sure have material you can point people to. I know we've talked about putting together like manuals of teaching people this. So we'll get into that after the break. We're going to take a short midway break here. Listen to a song called "The Ballad of the Green Mountain Boys" from Vermont, and they, of course, were the first folks during the American Revolution that not only took up arms against the British, but long before that, they threw all the crown officials out of their territory. They actually shut down the courthouses and told the crown judges to get on the nearest ship back to England. So that was one of the first shots of the American Revolution, actually invoking a new legal jurisdiction. So here we are, the Ballad of the Green Mountain Boys.
Borders, Vermonters, come down with your breeches of deerskin and jackets of brown, with your red woolen caps and your moccasins. Come to the gathering summons of trumpet and drum. Come down with your rifle, let gray wolf and fox howl on in the shadow of primitive rocks. Let bare feet securely from pig pen and stall. Here's two-legged game for your powder and ball. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer.
And we're back. This is Radio Free Kanata. I'm Kevin Annett. And one of the reasons I like that song is not only because of the lyrics, but it's no accident that Vermont was the only state in the Union never to have slaves. The first state to bring in a law saying property qualifications should not determine voting. Everyone should have the right to vote, whether you're poor or rich. And they presently are in a big battle with Monsanto because in Vermont, you're not allowed to have billboards anywhere in the countryside. And corporations like Monsanto have to list the ingredients of their stuff. And so Monsanto is waging a government, you know, a battle against the Vermont government to stop that. So, you know, the reason you got that tradition of liberty there is because they were the ones who led this fight early on, and they understood that it was about returning the law to the hands of the people. So anyway, end of that. Just another piece of education for our movement. I think it's very important. Anyway, back to Dean and everybody else. We were talking before the break about methods of teaching people about common law. Have you actually prepared stuff? I know you've done workshops. As a matter of fact, it was at a workshop where you were illegally arrested. do you want to talk a little bit about that? Some resources you might point people to in terms of learning about the common law rights?
Yeah, well, We'd covered a lot of that we had a two-day seminar where we were talking, just exposing the scam for the most part, and showing people how they're using words, wordsmithing to confuse people, the word aboriginal as opposed to original, all sorts of words like that. So we covered a bunch of definitions at the workshop and showed people the scam and, you know, what the Canada Act of 1982 is with, you know, the Crown Corporation going back to the United Kingdom. Then we were spending the second day talking about solutions, building our own new system, and just not even bothering to learn all this puke anymore and just getting out of it and just building something new. I mean, we're creators. We can create that kind of stuff, right? We can build any kind of society we want and just leave this old system and these shackles behind us. And so we just got and finished that. And, half an hour later, while we were doing our meet and greet, the goon squad walked in and I was arrested and black bagged for 16 months. So I'm out now, and a lot of people have made a lot of progress in being able to handle the courts much better and being able to access their rights even through existing laws and existing charters and existing international covenants, which is fine as well, but I don't really want to get caught into that game too much. I think that's just another control measure. The problem is that the people really never have built anything for themselves. We just rely on these institutions. And we think that if we protest every once in a while and try to force them to change a law here and there, that we're going to get our freedom back. And you'll never get your freedom back in a system created by somebody else that's for their benefit. So that's a lot of the solution-based stuff we're kind of getting into. Like exactly like what you say, all these with Monsanto there. I mean, how long are we going to battle against Monsanto? How many lawyers and billions of dollars do they have? Do people want to just keep fighting Monsanto or just build something new?
Well, but you know what the thing about that is? That's one of my biggest pet peeves, and I live a lifestyle that is, as far as I know and from all of my research and how I source my food, completely void of genetically modified organisms, at least to the best of my abilities. And what you tend to find when you research and understand this is you're right. It's really a waste of time and it's a waste of money to go protest and to try to do things legally. The best way to do it, it's still legal, is to use the dollar bill and to not purchase products that are made by those companies and to not purchase products that come from those companies. That's how you defeat them.
You have the right to not support their business, the right to spend what little money they leave you with where you choose to spend it. So, which is supporting new institutions, so to speak, or new movements or new economies where they're going to provide you with what you actually want, which is real food, non-GMO, organic, something that doesn't have pesticides sprayed all over it. And or we're educating people. What's more important than educating people on common law is just educating people on how to live properly. And then again, gardening, getting rid of your TV, starting to, do things with your family again, and just reinstating the family unit and having strength in family. These are all things that are more important than learning law. It's all rubbish. They're getting it the same way that everybody thinks we should be learning law and we should become experts in law is just as futile and useless and pointless as protesting against Monsanto. They'll just change the rules again.
Right.
That's what they do. If we spend 5 years and $1 billion forcing the government to pass a law that bans Monsanto from doing something, 2 months later, it'll be reinstated under some new piece of legislation.
Right. Yep. Or here in America, was people are becoming more and more aware of what goes into vaccinations. The president just went ahead and signed a bill where you are no longer allowed to sue a vaccination company, any company, no matter what they put in the vaccine, even if they've knowingly put something in it that can cause a number of different diseases, even if that includes being one of the leading causes in autism, amongst many other different things, you can no longer sue the vaccine companies. So that's what they'll do. You're exactly right. They'll just pass a law or they'll change something. They'll make a little loophole for themselves and they'll jump right through it.
Well, that's the – if you don't control a system, it can't be fair. You didn't create it yourselves. It's not in our hands. This is very good. I wanted to ask – all of you kind of a question when we're talking about organizing people around this. I find over the years, one of the things that's kind of obvious is that people tend to hold back. They wait for an example to see, you try it. And if your head doesn't get kicked in, maybe I'll join up kind of attitude. Are you finding that since all of us have had our heads kicked into some degree, I guess we're experts on that aspect. But, you know, are you finding that's changing at all? Anybody? What do you think?
I think it is.
Yeah.
But I still believe it's changing a lot faster than they imagined. Yeah. You know, they thought they could create the internet so they could spy on us. Well, you know, it's turned on them. More and more people are aware of what's going on because of the internet. I mean, sure, they're putting all kinds of blocks and threats, but you know what? It can't stop billions of people. No different, Kevin, than you had asked earlier, what do you think should be done to help people to understand? I mean, what processes, what do they need to do? I mean, the number one step is know what you're talking about. When they know you don't know, they'll just have a game with you.
Yep.
And that's number one. You have to know. You can fill out forms till you're blue in the face. But if you don't know what you just filled out because somebody said, hey, this worked for me, here's a template, you try it, the government's going to say, well, look at this, what a joke. This person doesn't know what they're talking about at all. We've had 20 of these in. What a joke. Let's just write them off, send them back. Meanwhile, that very first form that was sent in was good. The person who sent it in knew exactly what they were talking about. And bang, it went through. We have to quit thinking there's a template.
Yep.
There is no template. You have to know who you are.
Just stop believing the lies and the bullshit. This entire system depends on you believing in it. Yeah. That's one of the reasons that they tried to deny me bail at first, because they said it is the on tertiary grounds that people would lose faith in the administration of justice if somebody like me was released from prison. Awaiting trial. And that just tells me right there that that's the most important thing to them, is that people maintain the belief that that there is actually the administration of justice taking place in those courts. People need to believe in that system. That is the most important thing to them, because after belief, you have to have outright tyranny to maintain control. And at least at that point, then they're not blowing smoke up your ass anymore. They finally have to say, okay, you're right, we're completely full of shit. Now you're going to do what we tell you to, or we're just going to come and kick your fucking face right in.
Right.
And that's what we're down to. At least we're exposing that. Yeah.
But usually that's
fighting mode. But that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the sign. People are always saying, oh, the system's getting so repressive. Well, that's actually a sign of weakness. When they have to resort to outright force, it means that they've lost legitimacy and they can only bat their heads in. And so go ahead.
I was going to say, they never had legitimacy. Let's be correct about this. The people have lost the belief that they are legitimate. Now they have to expose the fact that they're actually tyrants.
Right.
Yeah, the veil has been lifted.
So if we've done nothing else, we've done that. And I'm okay with that, because now people can make the choice to say, okay, now that I at least know this system is garbage and that they really are tyrants, that just made us believe that we were governing ourselves. And let's be clear about that as well, is that that's the way this system is designed, is we actually believe that we are in control of our destiny. Oh, we vote for a politician and he represents us at parliament, and the laws they pass are all passed by people that are representing the people. So everything is all great. You know, like just this stupidity of the people to believe such rubbish. When really, you know, if you look at the numbers, the people aren't even voting anymore. People don't believe in this system. And even when you do vote for some guy and he goes down to allegedly be your representative in parliament, so now he is you in parliament. So anything that parliament passes for a law is your law. You made that law because it was your representative that voted for it. You know, whether or not it was your representative that actually got voted into office, and whether or not they actually did carry out the will of their quotation marks constituents. And that's the scam right there. They have you believing you actually have a representative who represents you, and they're passing laws that people actually want. And that is such nonsense.
They don't. As a matter of fact, all you have to do is read the Oath of Allegiance every member of Parliament takes. It's to Queen Elizabeth and her descendants. It's not to the people of Canada. Or its laws.
Exactly. And she allegedly gave her oath to us to respect our culture and our heritage and our laws and the law of the land and protect all that in exchange for them holding all land in trust, all crown land. That's all ours. Everything is ours. They know that. They're holding it in trust. That's those trust accounts we talked about that all the credit is sitting in, or all the value of the land and the resources that they're billing for these services we don't want. and we don't even know that there are services that are being foisted on us, right? And it's amusing that right in the case law they like to use against us so-called free men, Meads versus Meads, they talk about unilateral foisted agreements. Us quotation mark free men are trying to foist agreements on people by saying, look, I don't want to talk to you, and if you're going to force me to do something, I'm going to charge you X amount of dollars per hour. Well, isn't that hypocrisy? Everything they do to us is a unilateral foisted agreement, which means it's right. One way, and it's forced on you. You have no choice. So here you go. If you want something that is yours, yep. You must get it from us, and you're going to pay our fees, and you're going to get the service we provide you, which is shit. We're going to give you the shittiest service humankind could possibly come up with, and you're going to like it.
Implied consent.
Yeah, well, it's not even implied. Yeah, it's just...
Listen, I'm sorry. I just want to say I've got... I'm going to get back to you in a minute, but I just wanted to flag the fact that every day we must get 5 or 6 emails from people across Canada saying, I'm in trouble with CRA. What do I do? They're ripping me off. They're defrauding me. Let's talk a little bit about that and any insights about what people can do when they go up against Canada Revenue. But go ahead, Teresa.
Well, it comes back to knowledge. People, first of all, need to know who is a CRA. They're a C1 corporation, which is a foreign corporation. They're not a corporation registered in Canada.
No.
They're a foreign corporation.
They don't even have a service address listed in the provinces we're doing business in. If you try to find a service address at the company's office to where to find these people and serve them, it doesn't exist.
So who are they?
They're not even registered to do business in the provinces that they're in. It's just,
who are they? Who are they then? What are they?
They're just a private corporation that's registered.
We'll never know. And that's why I just gave up trying to follow the rabbit hole to the bottom to find out the source of all this crap. It's a red herring. It's a hamster wheel. We just need to stop. And all we have to do is look to the international covenants and the ICCPR, and you'll find out that in Article 1, all these nations, Canada included, because they're bound by this, recognize the fact you have the right to freely dispose of your natural wealth. So isn't that great that they gave you the right to freely dispose of your natural wealth? So it's deemed that you disposed of your natural wealth and you promised it to the Corporation of Canada. They gave you the right to do that. Well, the great thing about that is that works in reverse now as well. You also have the right to not freely dispose of your natural wealth, which is your life, your property, the resources of this land. And all you got to do is send notice to these people saying, hey, I want nothing to do with you. I never promised you my natural wealth. I'm revoking any such grant.
Right.
And I'm going to keep all my natural wealth for my own personal well-being, for my own personal profit, for my own. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, contributing.
Contributing, that's
that's the way John had phrased it. There's other people working on this that are coming up with better ways of putting it, but I had put an affidavit into the court that said, look, I've never promised or pledged any of my natural wealth to the Corporation of Canada ever in my life. And if I had, inadvertently, I'm revoking any such promise or pledge right now.
And when they deny that, you now have proof to take them to federal court.
You now have proof that they violated their international obligations under the International Covenant on Civil Political Rights. It's in all my court documents. I've been doing this for 12 months now. They've been doing their best to ignore it. But they can't. The cat's out of the bag on that one. Again, that's the whole scam, is that through Canada Revenue Agency, they are forcing you to contribute to their corporation, to their society. That's all. You got to remember, that's all the Democratic Society of Canada is. The Constitution Act, which is Schedule B to the Canada Act 1982, United Kingdom, which was an act to rename the British North America Act of 1867. That's all it is. That was a crown corporation. That's all it ever was. And they're getting you to be a member of their society, no different than the Law Society or any other millions of different private societies out there. So now they're saying, okay, you willingly became a member of our society, and now you have to contribute to it. So a portion of everything you make has to go to this society. That's where CRA gets its jurisdiction from. Well, you have the right to not promise your natural wealth to anybody. Your natural wealth is your body, your labor, and everything that goes along with your life and everything that you were born and have a birthright to.
Okay, so let's say somebody gets a notice in the mail from Canada Revenue. You owe us a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. What are people to do? What's the first thing they should do?
Well, and that's been the source of a lot of contention for years now, and I think we're really starting to simplify that. People want to get into the natural person, artificial person argument now for the last number of years, and that's just causing a lot of issues. And I think what we're finding now, and I mean, I've been out of this game for 19 years now. Sorry, I'm going to be celebrating my 19th year this year of not filing income taxes or paying income taxes. And what's amazing is when I think back to the notices that I sent back to Canada Revenue Agency 16, going on 17 years ago now, that made them finally start leaving me alone. I sent them a notice that I was no longer a member of their organization. I told them that verbally on the phone, in person when someone came to my door, and I sent them a notice in the mail that said, I do not wish to be a client or member of your organization any longer.
What did they do?
That's all I sent them 17 years ago, and it actually took me another 17 years after that to figure out what it was that I did right.
So how did they respond when you wrote them that?
They didn't respond to me ever again. I also included in that notice the fact that now, because I don't want to be a member of the organization anymore, I'm not obligated to even answer mail from them. So now when they send me mail, if I have to respond to them, I'm going to be billing them $50,000 an hour for my time. And so the next time they sent me a letter, when I respond, there's going to be a bill attached to it for the $50,000, and I'll take them to federal court if I have to collect on the bill. They never contacted me ever again.
Okay, so on that, is that something you'd recommend people simply do?
Absolutely. I no longer wish to be a member of your organization. And when you're talking about their organization, they're simply a collection agent for the Democratic Society of Canada. Canada, C-A-N-A-D-A, under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, that created a society. That's it. Okay. And you became a member of that society when you made application for a birth certificate to be recognized in that society. What that was is that granted by way of a grant or a promise or a pledge to that society, all your resources, your life, your labor, everything that the founding fathers of the United States of America promised in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. Didn't they promise their life, their labor, their property, their honor, their reputation, everything they pledged to the creation of a new nation? Well, that meant that none of it was theirs anymore. It all belonged to the new nation. So that's all that the monarchy, I guess, at the time did, was they figured, okay, well, let's just create new societies, new institutions, new governments, and we'll just get the people to pledge everything to it. And that way it all looks like it's voluntary. We're not forcing them to do anything anymore.
Okay. So do people send their birth certificates back?
I used to be up in the air about that and telling people, no, you know what, you don't need to do any of that yet. A lot of people out there are still saying, no, you need to surrender that or redeem it down at the land titles or the vital statistics office where you made application for it. I'm not going to say one way or the other whether or not you should or should not do that. I've seen conflicting things on that as well right now. But what I will say is that what you should do is let them know what you want. Let them know that you did not know that you ever, ever promised your natural wealth and your life to their private democratic society. And had they ever told you what all went along with that, you never would have agreed to something like that, which means you've been deceived your entire life. And then you wish to remove yourself. You wish to not be a member or associated to their democratic society any longer. You never did. You don't now, and you never will. And you want to be removed from everything. You want everything back.
Okay.
Kevin, I believe that everybody should get their live birth record.
Yes.
You want a place to start for people? Get the live birth. Learn what it is. Learn how powerful it is, because that's prima facie on who you are. I am this man or woman. I am not your entity. Here's proof. I want the administration of justice now.
So that's the record of live birth, not the birth certificate.
Right. Yeah, there is a record of live birth or particulars of live birth or registration.
Has a different name.
It's a live birth document. It's a little bit different than the birth certificate, and it is deemed to be prima facie evidence in any court of Canada according to the Vital Statistics Act. I think it's like Section 34, and we've known about that for years now. John really brought that home recently when I spoke to him, John Spirit there. about the importance of that. And really, at the end of the day, though, to be honest with you, how much more proof do they need that I'm alive than the fact that I'm standing there in a courtroom?
Right.
Can you not see me? Are you going to try to tell me that I'm not a living man?
Right. Dean,
are you going to make a determination of law that I am not a living man standing in front of you right now?
Dean, we've unfortunately only got about 2 minutes left. I want to, of course, invite you on again. We're just scratching the surface here. I did want to ask everybody for next week to write to us and list some of the things that you would like Dean and us to get into more in more detail. I know people have some questions about, well, when is the next event going to be held, the next training workshop, whatever. Let's get into the more nuts and bolts next week, if you're free, Dean, if that works for you.
Yeah, and I should probably let everybody know, too, and I promised Steve and I would make sure that I plugged our site, too. We're working on a lot of stuff. We've got a lot of information people can come check out in videos. I've got a simple website at deanclifford.info, and it links to all my videos and the stuff we've been doing for years now and information. We're always releasing new stuff and coming out with new stuff. And actually, as of yesterday now, I'm also going to be hosting my own live stream video show, news show on the CCN network, which is Conscious Consumer Network. So that's going to be tomorrow at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. every Monday from now on, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on CCN. I'll be on there live, and we'll be talking about a range of topics. And really, it's just getting the truth out there. That's what's going to help people. Good. And I'm going to do that using whatever platform I can.
Dean, that's fantastic news. We'll be sure to post that link, and we'll have you on again next week. And for everybody else, thank you for participating. Follow the work at CanadaRepublic.ca, and we will be back here in 1 week once more with Dean. Thank you all.